Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 4th of April, recording at 9:19 p.m. British Summer Time, and a very summery day it has been indeed. Long may it last. Now, this being Friday, this is a big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first, a quick review of the week. It's been a quiet one for a change. I don't think anybody's going to complain about that. Stock markets mostly steady. And including, but again, as I say, quiet, not much in the way of percentage changes in here today. And government bonds, so we had a jump in the U.S. Treasuries today, and that was due to some very weak jobs figures. U.S. dollar barely steady in the sort of middle range of its small trading range here, and down against the euro, which is back up to 157.35. Precious metals, having had a plunge at the beginning of the week, are edging higher in here. And what else to mention? Industrial metals were mixed, but copper, this is interesting, back up at 395, so this is really looking at the highs of the last couple of years. And we have, what else, crude oil, that was pretty strong earlier on. Let me find it on the screen. Yes, 106.14, that's up 231. The natural gas is lagging at currently 932. Lumber had a good day in here today. We've had two upward dynamics this week. Mind you, it was pretty well stretched on the downside, but up $7. The agricultural commodities were mostly steadier in here today as well. And that's pretty much it. Okay. So, what's going on here overall? Well, first, in terms of stock markets, we have seen for the markets that are in ranging phases, and there are a lot of them, not least the European markets and also the US indices, we're seeing looks at the or tests of the upper side of those trading ranges, and some of the Europeans have edged above their February highs, and the Nasdaq has edged above its February highs. So that's really quite interesting, although it's not nearly so interesting as the terrific upward dynamics that we were getting in the middle of last month as the January lows were tested and in some instances briefly exceeded. Now, this is an area where you can expect investors to be a little bit nervous, but we're not seeing the aggressive short covering. I beg your pardon. We're not seeing the aggressive short selling that occurred on the last look at the February highs, which occurred in the first part of March, where the rallies were quickly rebuffed. And also, the upside volume, I gather, for most markets, I don't follow that very closely, but I have seen some commentators pointing out that upside volume is now better relative to the downside days than we have seen for quite some time. That's not surprising in my view. Now, not all of these markets are showing steady action. China closed today, the Chinese indices, the mainland Chinese indices, although they were up yesterday, they've been really quite weak, certainly underperforming, but also looking somewhat overstretched as well. Now, I reviewed a number of those markets earlier in the week, and including the ones that I like most yesterday. But say China's still lagging, India's still lagging, but if this is a bottoming out process, and I argue that that's what the balance of the technical evidence suggests, then I don't think we will say, I don't think we will see China and India staying down all that long. But what's happened really is that in recent months we've seen a lot of deleveraging. Now, hardly surprising, investors were terrified, so they've been raising cash. So the question is, what would drive markets a whole lot lower? Well, in terms of financial news, regarding the banks, there's always the possibility of another shoe to drop, but most of this is known, and the markets are holding up better as additional write-downs are announced. And they are also responding favorably to the Fed, which has gained a little bit of emotional intelligence in the last month, and is doing so by making frequent statements. Also, the Treasury showing to or signaling to people that actually they understand what's going on, they are dealing with it, that they have a large arsenal and a lot of imagination in terms of thinking about potential solutions for the various different problems. In other words, the situation is not out of control. They are not powerless. We are not seeing a lack of leadership. You go back to January and just about any other month last year, and we were getting a very poor management of the situation in terms of any sort of reassurances for the markets. Now that's important because a lot of this is about confidence. And well, how can that be when the banks lost so much money and there was all this subprime slime? Well, confidence I'm talking about is the confidence, lack of confidence that caused bonds, both good and bad, corporate bonds I'm talking about now, to be hammered through the floor. Confidence that caused people to push inflation-adjusted tips up to negative yields. Lack of confidence that caused people to flood into normal treasury bonds, producing yields or driving yields down to levels that are below the current rate of inflation. The loss of confidence that caused apocalyptic forecasts from the mainstream media. And of course, all this fanned by a very big contingent of people who were selling and could do so without that uptick rule that the SEC in the US, the Securities and Exchange Commission, removed stupidly back in September, as I commented at the time. In other words, that was just yet more deregulation, and Wall Street does not need more deregulation. That's for sure. But what it most needs is some sound governance, and that's been a scarce commodity recently. Okay, but overall, getting back to this stock market action, it shows evidence of base building, support building for most of these indices. The sentiment indicators, which I've talked about at length previously, were dramatic. And there's been a tendency for some people just to rationalize this and say, well, it's not enough, or it, but that's you always get that type of talk at the bottom of the market. And I feel, in terms of psychological perception stages, veteran subscribers who have attended the chart seminar will know all about that. But it'll be new material for new subscribers, and so I've written about it a bit here today. But the first psychological perception stage of a new bullish phase is that lows are starting to rise for a number of markets. And they have shown more upward dynamics than downward dynamics within trading ranges. Yet the crowd doesn't believe it. The crowd is still looking for another down leg. Now, the seeming paradox is at the bottom of the market, the perception of risk is highest when it's actually lowest. Well, why might it be lowest? Right now, for instance. And I think the risk is mainly one of ranging rather than the possibility of another plunge, and I'll maintain that view. One has to be practical about it, but as long as those January and March lows or thereabouts are holding, for most indices, I'll maintain that view. And of course, Wall Street is the big one in terms of overall influence. Now, get back to this first psychological perception stage of a recovering market. First, it's healthier because prices have fallen a long way, so they've discounted a lot of bad news. And we also have better valuations against that background, despite scope for lower corporate profits. Investors, crucially, have raised a lot of cash. That's what all that deleveraging has done, where it's lower debt levels, and the more conservative investors have been able to increase cash. And I'm also told that hedge funds have the highest cash levels that they've had for really quite some time. So there's the fuel or the financial firepower there to fuel a rally. And that's quite important. Sentiment is always most cautious, most negative near the bottom of a market. The news, at least the news that's printed by the press, is certainly, which really basically is a mirror and just reflects public sentiment, is going to be worst near the bottom of the market. And that's where I think we are right now. Again, I say the main risk, I think, is the convalescence time. And I can also add that these financial indices have improved a fair bit recently. Now, that's not all game, set, and match. It never is in markets. But it's a favorable background, and it's a background in which I think that investors should be deploying cash rather than still raising cash. I don't think you need to chase anything higher, but to buy the dips in fuller money themes and high yield funds, if you like high yield funds, and some of these shares that have good growth prospects, particularly some of the multinational companies that have been knocked way down. So stock markets, I think, generally are in an accumulation zone, in that meaning that they should be accumulated. We should be putting money into the market, not taking it out at these levels. Or what about the government bonds? They're going to remain relatively firm. I'm talking about government bond prices, long-dated prices, but there's no value there. So, really, a point I've made over and over again, so I'll be very brief, is that when animal spirits return to stock markets, and that takes time after a frightening sell-off, but when that does happen, and when stock markets are clearly in ranging uptrends rather than ranging downtrends, then those bonds are going to come under a lot of pressure because investors will be discounting somewhat stronger growth. And there's also the specter of inflation, which will concern investors. So they don't represent good value, and I don't think those long-dated government bonds do not represent good value. And neither do most money market funds. And if you're getting a very high yield, and it's not in some sort of dodgy thing. I'm talking about currency yields now. If you can get a decent currency yield in a viable developed country currency, or some of the resources currencies, I think those are very good. And Asian currencies, I think, are the most undervalued, generally. Then that's okay. But money in cash in U.S. money market funds, that's a certain loser in terms of purchasing power. And U.K. bank deposits are not what they were and are probably going to go lower as well. Now, government, beg your pardon, corporate bonds. I was talking to Mark Lowry about this earlier today, and he feels that we're seeing bottoms in a number of these quality corporate bonds that have been sold down quite heavily. And you know what happens when you get sort of a panicky environment in markets and people are deleveraging, the good stuff gets sold as well as the bad stuff because the focus is on raising liquidity. That's what investors are trying to do. And so they're almost more inclined to sell the good stuff because they can. Now, what about these currencies overall? Well, I've talked a little bit about them in this broadcast, but I don't like the dollar, and I know the dollar's got its backers. People have been talking the dollar up. A number of people have been talking the dollar up for months. The technical action is not good. The fundamental action is not good. The best thing that can be said about the dollar in terms of a bullish outlook is that it's been driven down a long way. And people can also cite purchasing power, parity. I'll feel like an expert on that after I am come back to a trip to the States it's tomorrow. Now, I don't think those are the factors that count for currencies. I think the trend and the trend momentum is important. I think the amount of supply of the currency is extremely important. There's plenty of supply in terms of US dollars. Interest rate differentials, they are an important hard fundamental, and they are not favorable. The US economy is weak, and it will remain weak for a while. There's the one strong spot. Portion of the U.S. economy, it's more than a spot, segment of the U.S. economy is the multinational export sector. And just these multinational companies that have thrived in globalization, that's a useful chunk of the U.S. economy, and that's what is keeping just barely keeping the economy out of recession or likely to cause a shallow recession. But as I've said before, just to clarify that comment, I've said that if you really got two economies in the US, you've got the domestic economy and then you've got that multinational economy. The domestic economy is flat on its back and out for the count of 10. It's not going to recover quickly. How could it? With the house prices down and continuing lower, and with consumer debt so extremely high, the multinational section of the US economy, though, is doing exceptionally well and consolidating overseas earnings in weak US dollars, which enhances the corporate profits in dollars at any rate. So it's important to always to bear that in mind. But as for the dollar, I don't like it, and I think we will see another downward leg. But I have been saying recently that it was temporarily oversold, that we should see a little bit of short covering and ranging phase, and that's what we're getting. But I don't see any big upside move on the cards here for the dollar anytime soon. As far as commodities are concerned, they all accelerated up, or most of them accelerated higher, and we know what happens following that. They become vulnerable to corrections, and that's what we've been seeing. But this is a secular bull market, and so they won't stay down. They will get some very, very big swings. Commodities have always been volatile. Most of them are relatively thin markets. A lot of activity takes place in futures, which are highly leveraged, which adds to the day-to-day volatility, certainly, although not necessarily to the peak to trough extremes in these markets. And there's also a cyclical factor in terms of something that runs ahead too rapidly, and it can price itself out of the market, and there's substitution and so on. So just a very, very volatile sector, but it is in an overall secular bull market. And I've been saying that, as is Owen, since really early in this decade. And I don't see any evidence that that has changed. But what's also been a mantra for us in terms of commodities is don't pay up. If you like something, you only buy it on reactions. If it's in an uptrend, you buy it on a reaction within that uptrend. And if it breaks the uptrend, and we've certainly had some medium-term uptrend damage in the precious metals, then you want to be very careful indeed. So I'm not convinced that we've seen the end of the reaction in precious metals, although they are a lot less overbought than they were. And I think that's pretty much it, folks. Well, I will miss you in terms of those emails and fine reports and so on that you send in. Next week I will be away. Owen will be back. I will be keeping an eye on what's going on, of course. How could I not? It's all so exciting. And I look forward to resuming my audios and my copies, my copy the week after next. Meanwhile, all the very best to all of you.